Next headline. Refueling workouts is critical to A, protecting lean tissue, B, recover, and C, reduce sports injury risk. After a hard workout, it is a loss of sugar, glucose, in your muscles that will keep your blood sugar low for many hours or even days. You therefore must refuel while your muscles are still absorbing glucose at a high rate from having just worked out. Glucose is in starches, meaning tubers and cereal grains, and since muscle is absorbing fuel quickly, you want the glucose source to digest quickly. You read that right. Eat a fast-digesting starch such as baked goods, chips, pretzels, or dry cereal right after a hard workout. Fruit is the wrong sugar. Half of its sugar is going to the liver instead of muscle, therefore failing to refuel you sufficiently unless you overload the liver at the same time. You could use fruit after a moderate workout that does not need refueling as much, since the muscles will at least get half the sugars that are glucose in the fruit. After a workout that uses up less than 10% of your daily calories, you might not need to refuel at all, since the losses might not be large enough to trigger a chronically low blood sugar. Failing to refuel hard workouts therefore makes it difficult to maintain high levels of recovery, physical energy, mental focus, and over the long term, reduces your health. A systematic review of the literature has shown that most symptoms of overtraining in athletic individuals stems from poor nutrition, in particular from eating only half as much carbohydrate as they need. How much carbohydrate we eat does not tell us how we space those carbs out through our day or what carb foods we're choosing to eat. To get a sense of the best approaches for overall timing, we look to the calorie deficit research, showing that while it is fine to be fasted, there is a transition to being starved, even if you do not notice any hunger after A, not eating for a dozen hours, B, doing a hard workout for even just 1 hour, or C, combining these so that you're doing hard workouts not only in the fasted state, but in the starved state. Hard workouts while starved could put you into a caloric deficit exceeding 50%, after which the body will be breaking down more day by day rather than building up. This is true even if you overeat healthy foods later in the day. The harder your body must work, the more it has to recover. The more it must recover, the more it depends on every hour of the day to succeed in recovering. The strongest driving force in our muscle fibers for DNA gene expression for recovery and growth is the target of rapamycin, TOR. TOR is shut down by excess adenosine monophosphate kinase, AMPK activation. AMPK is the strongest driving force for DNA gene expression for fat burning. A complete absence of refueling after hard workouts maximally activates AMPK, but at the cost of deactivating TOR. This means that focusing entirely on depleting the body to burn more fats shuts down healing at the DNA level. Failing to refuel after a hard workout leaves the muscles used in that workout low in fuel for the next workout, leading to earlier fatigue in those muscles compared to the surrounding muscles that were not used as heavily. When your main muscles fatigue sooner, your other muscles try to make up for the loss. This changes forces across the joint, increasing the risk of joint injury. Next headline. A fast digesting starch after hard workouts is essential garbage. In the end, refueling hard workouts is more than just about performance. It's about recovering, protecting lean tissue, and reducing sports injury risk. Right after hard exercise is the only time that fast-digesting starches are needed to keep you healthy, which is why I refer to them as essential garbage. This is a term coined during a discussion with my friend Rana Modir, a clinical registered dietitian who came to me for help when her clinical knowledge was not helping her stay healthy in the face of her strenuous workout program. Next headline. Sports nutrition is fundamentally based on protecting and nourishing damaged, exhausted lean tissue. Sports nutrition at its core protects and nourishes lean tissue by replacing perspiration and fuel losses, and by recovering damaged lean tissue by supplying recovery needs. The hardest workout schedule someone can maintain for extended periods of time uses up to three times their baseline protein needs. Triple baseline is roughly 2 grams of protein per kilogram body weight per day, of which anything over the baseline 0.6 grams of protein per kilogram per day is specifically for healing recovery. That recovery protein should be matched roughly 1-to-1 with dietary carbohydrate to fuel the protein assembly process central to healing. As calories increase, the amount of fats should increase as necessary to not fall below the minimum 20% of calories. The lower your dietary fat, the more important it is to make sure your essential omega-3 and 6 fats meet your minimum needs, and the more you should consider increasing your essential fat intake by a factor of 2 or 3. As carbohydrate needs increase in meals to maintain recovery levels, having vegetables in those meals to slow down digestion becomes more important. Slower digestion increases the time your lean tissues have to absorb and therefore use the nutrients you are delivering to them, increasing their recovery. Harder training increases free radical production in the body, also increasing the need for vegetables. Antioxidant supplements can cut exercise adaptation in half, which is why the International Olympic Committee and International Society for Sports Nutrition recommends against antioxidant supplementation for athletes. That antioxidant supplements can significantly hurt an athlete's progress highlights the importance of the concept of food first. All food groups are important for sports nutrition. Overtraining symptoms can arise from A, being low in any one of the four food groups, B, from falling short in calories by more than 10 to 25% for even a part of your day, or C, from failing to refuel workouts that exceed roughly 10% of your regular daily calorie needs. These targets respectively address A, basic health, B, having enough energy, and C, replacing calories where its losses are the greatest. Unfortunately, failing to replace fuel losses in muscle soon after hard exercise, when the absorption rate of fuel into muscle is still high, easily results in muscle chronically robbing your blood sugar to refuel for a day or more, keeping your energy low and hunger high, particularly late at night when excess eating in response to the hunger triggered by underfueling causes further damage by disrupting sleep. Next headline, meal frequency can be anywhere from 1 to 12 feedings per day. The fewer times you eat in the day, the slower the digestion of meals you should have so that nutrients are delivered slowly for as many hours as possible. The more frequently you eat, the less important this becomes. Since most protein and carbohydrate foods that are unprocessed, particularly lean tissue for 4 to 6 hours, eating more frequently than 6 hours would eliminate the need to protect lean tissue every time you eat. You could alternate between feedings that protect lean tissue every 4 to 6 hours with feedings that nourish lean tissue in between. Eating once per day would supply nutrients to your body for 6 to 12 hours, depending on the digestion rate of the foods in the meals. Legumes, fats, and raw vegetables digest slowly enough for a 12-hour nutrient delivery. This would leave the next 6 hours fasted, and then only 6 more hours starved before you eat your once daily meal again. Eating more frequently, 2 to 3 or even a dozen times per day, increases your flexibility in what foods you eat. Next headline. How to break and go into a fast. Research shows that people lose twice as much muscle tissue as body fat when fasting by skipping breakfast, with any benefits coming only from the extent of caloric restriction from having fasted. Caloric restriction can, of course, be practiced without fasting, simply by cutting down how much you eat. Since the body transitioned from fed to fasted to starved in 6-hour increments, when you have not eaten in 12 hours, you are transitioning to starved, where the detriments of not eating might be as great or greater than the benefits. It is best to rescue your body coming out of a fast that has transitioned to starved with foods that digest at a moderate speed, as opposed to eating either the slowest, healthiest, or fastest processed digesting foods. This rescues your body from the starved state faster, so long as you avoid highly processed food that generate a large insulin response. Rescuing your body with a donut, pastry, bagel, or dry cereal is no rescue at all. Foods that digest at a moderate speed include soft proteins such as yogurt and soft tofu, and carbs high enough in calories to get your blood sugar up at a pace neither fast nor slow, such as fruit or coarse whole grains. On the other hand, your meal before entering a fast should digest as slowly as possible to maintain your blood sugar and blood protein levels for as long as possible into your fast. The fast might be in the dozen hours between dinner and breakfast the next day, or it might be an intentional fasting regimen. I used uncooked oats with chia seeds, nuts, and milk, or else yogurt with chia and fruit to break my fast, referring to it as my PLT snack, since it is very low in total calories. Soft protein sources do not take as long to digest, so I do not use them in meals meant to last over 4 hours until the next feeding. My full breakfast is a couple hours later, using slower foods, cottage cheese with walnuts and other berries, or a sprinkle of granola, or else an egg with at least a cup of vegetables and some beans. My dinner is generally at least 5 hours before going to sleep, so I want it to last as long as the breakfast did, and therefore has equally slow foods as my breakfast. If I have a snack 1 or 2 hours before bed, it tends to be slightly faster digesting, like my morning PLT snack, since I do not want much undigested food in my system when trying to get quality sleep. And in the reading, I have a chart here on how to break and enter a fast, where breaking a fast is with moderately digesting easy, softer type foods. It could be legumes like lentil soup. It could be yogurt. And, you know, so that it's not taking a whole hour to get your blood chemistry up. And when entering a fast, you want it to be slower digesting stuff. Next headline. If you're suffering from hunger, A, balance your entire meal. B, eat earlier. And C, refuel hard workouts. If you are incessantly hungry, your blood sugar was or is too low, and you are low in, or you're low in some other macronutrient. If you are high or low in one food group, try eating a meal that is not only balanced in your basic needs, but also in the extra food you add to get enough calories. Meeting basic macro needs makes up not even half of your caloric needs, meaning you can have more than half of your food coming from any food group that you want. However, your needs for one food group might be more than you realize, such as if you're exercising hard and underestimating the damage to your body from the workouts. Balancing out the food groups of the entire meal, not just the core portion meeting macro needs, allows you to test out if your basic needs are being met or not. Regardless of your macro needs and how balanced your eating is, if you go too long with too low a calorie intake, your body will remember the low levels of nutrients in your bloodstream. This will increase your perception of hunger later. Meals that digest faster increase insulin more, resulting in a larger blood sugar drop an hour or two after the meal, which raises hunger for at least the next 24 hours. Therefore, eating processed foods can increase hunger later in the same way as having not eaten at all, which is why I refer to processed meals as anti-eating, since they can have an effect potentially even worse than not eating. Hard workouts not only drop your blood sugar, but if you do not refuel them sufficiently, will also keep your blood sugar low for hours or even days, depending on how low your carbohydrate levels are in your meals. Under-eating meals, under-fueling workouts, and processed foods therefore increase the risk of hunger. Next headline. Cravings can stem from earlier low blood nutrient levels and are not satisfied by eating enough food. Hunger is your current perception of nutrient needs. It tells you that you need to eat, but sometimes we eat to fullness and want to keep eating anyway. While hunger can be satisfied, cravings can persist regardless of how satiated we are. The stress hormones adrenaline and cortisol associated with waking from sleep and with exercise inhibit hunger perception in some people to the point where they perceive no hunger at all. The brain will drive cravings to compensate for low nutrient levels earlier in the day. Hunger is satisfied when it is perceived, but cravings must be satisfied in advance before you perceive them, meaning they can be avoided but not eliminated once they are there. Simply add some vegetables and other bulky foods to your meal and eat earlier the next day. There is relief in simplicity. Once we have a sense of how to meet minimum needs, it becomes clear both how important those needs are and how easy it is to meet them. Otherwise, we might not supply that minimum need, making the rest of our healthy diet efforts less effective. Fix the small things we need, and the rest works very well. This is how any system works, with each part depending on the other parts. Chart out what you're doing or planning to do, focusing first on what you want to eat, and then fill in any gaps with small adjustments using foods that you like but might not have included in that meal. Next headline. Example meals, all of which can be modified for any type of diet. Switch out vegan, vegetarian, or meat protein sources in any recipe to make it your own. Increase or reduce the portions of any food group for how you like to eat and for your goals, always meeting bare minimum needs, which includes sports nutrition, so that your diet does not potentially backfire. Creating an eating pattern from scratch is easily accomplished by building meals that protect lean tissue a few times a day and then adding vegetables and fats to nourish the body one or more times per day beyond that. And in this reading, I have example breakfast, lunches, and dinners. I'll just read off the top line of each. Yogurt, berries, optional chia or flax seeds for breakfast, a lunch, the other example breakfast, cottage cheese, sprinkle of granola with some chia seeds, milk or soy milk is the protein with some oatmeal. I don't even bother cooking mine, again, with chia or flax seeds, eggs, beans, or a hearty toast with some avocado. Example lunches, a sandwich using a bean spread, tofu, or any meat as the protein, as hearty a bread as you can find, a bunch of lettuce, tomato, where the vegetables have at least the same volume as the bread, some avocado, have pizza, going with thin crust, having salad to slow the digestion, and some soup, bean, tofu, or meat as the protein in there, beans or corn kernels as the carbohydrate. So beans would be both a protein and a carbohydrate, have some vegetables in there, a salad where you've got beans, tofu, or chicken on it as the protein, corn, quinoa, wild rice, baked yam as the carbohydrate on top, or even pieces of fruit, and colorful veggies on there, olive oil or avocado as the fat. For dinners, you could have some meat or a veggie, high protein equivalent, like bean-based pasta, and some salad or vegetables on the side, fish or tofu dish with wild rice and steamed vegetables, any protein entree with a baked yam, with raw veggies, some pesto and hummus dip, or chicken, salmon, beef, or veggie patty on a hearty hamburger bun, if you can find something like that. I've seen some seeded versions, and I would go with either the top or the bottom, not with both, and some roasted vegetables on the side. So the next reading headline, eating anywhere from 1 to 12 times per day. The cells in your body don't know what you ate, how much, or when. They only know what is available in the bloodstream. Whatever is delivered to your cells is the environment or ecosystem within which they are interacting and jostling to meet their needs. The closer you get to providing nutrients at the rate they need it, particularly for nutrients they cannot store well, such as water and protein, the happier they will be. Eating once per day. It could take 12 hours to fully digest a meal of nuts, raw veggies, and cooked lentils. Your cells will benefit almost the same as if you had eaten 3 smaller meals over the same time period. Physical activity when you're fasted or starved is harder on the body than when you have eaten at least something recently. But if you're only going to eat once in a day, it should be soon after any workout, since exercise will leave you depleted until you eat, at which point recovery can finally begin. Eating 2 to 4 times per day. Eating once per day leaves you only one opportunity to nourish your body, whereas more than once per day allows you to eat without necessarily having vegetables and omega fats each time. Multiple feedings also allows you to eat less at any one time while still getting at least 75% of your calorie needs, below which metabolism slows more significantly. Eating 5 or more times per day. When there are only a few hours between feedings, you can alternate which nutrients dominate the feeding. For example, protein in meal 1 can last your body until meal 3 so that you don't need much protein in meal 2 between them. Macronutrient balance through your day becomes balance between multiple feedings considered together instead of balance within each individual feeding. So then in the reading, I have 3 different charts. One giving examples of eating once per day. Another chart for examples of how to eat, what meals would look like if you're eating 2 to 4 times a day, and another for 5 or more times a day. So once per day, you have the slowest digesting stuff, legumes, tempeh, tofu, cottage cheese, things that are tougher to digest as a protein source. Those same legumes can be your carbohydrate source, squash, berries, higher calorie vegetables like carrots, tomatoes. Those would be the slowest carb fuel sources. And then vegetables that are either al dente, so still crunchy, or left raw, those are the slowest. And then nuts, avocado, hummus, fats generally digest slow. If you're eating 2 to 4 times a day, this is where you can start to have a little bit softer sources of food like yogurt, milk, soy milk as your protein, whole grains in smaller amounts because the meal doesn't have to last you as long. And where the vegetables can be cooked soft because you're not trying to get to 12 hours. You're just trying to get to a few hours at the most, 5-6 hours with your meals. If you're going to have 5 or more meals a day, this is where you have the greatest variability in options in how soft the food is. Your body cares about the availability of nutrients, not how you made them available. The slower digesting your foods, the more evenly they're delivered over time, making frequent meals or having each food group every time you eat less important. Slow digesting foods and eating more frequently achieves the same goals of evening out nutrient delivery. There is a diminishing return on the benefits of trying to do both at the same time, since digestion of closely spaced feedings of slow digestion foods will overlap. Slow digesting foods are, as an example, in the every hour has no advantage over every 2 to 3 hours, or for the slowest healthy foods every 4 to 6 hours. Choose how often you want to eat and manage the feedings from there to keep your body happy. So in other words, trying to eat every 2 hours the slowest digesting foods possible is unnecessary because the digestion rates start to overlap so much that it becomes overkill. So in the reading, there's an example here of having 8 meals or feedings a day where every other one of those meals doesn't necessarily have a bunch of protein in it because there's enough from the last feeding. So 4 or 5 of the 8 feedings have protein, and 4 or 5 of the feedings have a significant slow digesting carb to maintain blood sugar. And wherever the highest carb load is in a feeding, that's where the highest coarse vegetable is to slow it down. Next headline, designing your snacks for the specific reason you are snacking. First, energy snacks. For mental and or physical energy, first reduce any dehydration by having a glass of water. Then bump up your blood sugar with an unprocessed carbohydrate. Processed carbohydrates such as crackers, chips, muffins, scones, and other baked goods digest faster than lean tissue can absorb them, triggering an insulin response that increases body fat at the expense of the stable blood sugar, ultimately lowering your energy levels, which is exactly the opposite of what you were snacking for. Dehydration can make you feel tired, so start with a glass of water. Then stabilize your blood sugar with, for example, a legume salad, cooked lentils or beans combined with some flavor, or some whole fruit, which can be cut up but not blended or juiced, like apple, pear, or berries, or a slower carbohydrate, like a higher calorie vegetable, bell pepper, carrot, snap peas, jicama, cherry tomatoes. Vegetables, even lower in carb calories, will provide fullness but are unlikely to raise energy levels. For sports nutrition, any of the above options that provide a significant amount of slow digesting carbohydrate will boost subsequent energy levels in a workout. Use a faster carb to refuel afterwards, after the workout, not before. Hunger snacks target a protein or fat together with a vegetable or carb fuel source. The hormones that reduce hunger for several hours respond particularly well to proteins and fats. Whereas vegetables put coarse bulk into the stomach and carbs bump up blood sugar, either of these reducing hunger in the short term. Only eating protein and or fats as a snack, such as cheese or nuts, might take an overload of calories to satisfy strong hunger, whereas veggies or carbs by themselves would only satisfy hunger for an hour before you likely want to snack again. To satisfy hunger both immediately and for hours, combine both a protein or fat together with a vegetable or carbohydrate. Using the chart, you would pick one food from the outside blue columns, which is a protein or fat in the reading chart, meaning a protein or fat, and combine this with one food from the inside red columns, which is carbohydrate and or a vegetable. It is the combination of these that reduces both hunger in the short and long term. And in the reading, there is a chart here where the protein and fat column food options are in blue. The carb fuel and vegetable options are in red. So, for example, you could have some fruit with nuts. That's a carb fuel with a fat, or fruit with cheese, which is a carb fuel with a fat that also contains protein, or a little bit of fruit on yogurt, which again is a carb fuel with protein. You could have vegetable pieces dipped into pesto or hummus, which is veggies with a healthy fat source. And for sports nutrition, the recovery snack would include protein and a carbohydrate fuel, as opposed to what we were just discussing for when you're only targeting hunger. And right after exercise, a fast digesting starch where protein is optional. There is a time window for refueling carbohydrate where ideally it's in the first hour. And it really matters and you're struggling with your health in the face of hard exercise where you're getting overtraining symptoms, refuel within 10 minutes. Protein isn't as urgent, but optionally can be included within those 10 minutes as well.